welcome back to another exciting Elvis Extra Feature interview. Today I have a fabulous guest, Key W. Miller, whose film Ink and Gold won Best Editing at the South Pacific Film Festival, if I got it correctly. And I want everybody to know, this is the first time I've ever had an editor on the show. This is his bag. So we're going to do things a little bit different. We're going to get into some editing, why editing, as opposed to other things. But he's a bag man of all trades. So I'm sure he knows many things, but we'll get into it all. According to his bio, he's a triple threat. So we're going to get into all that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start at the beginning. When you come onto a project like Ink and Gold, I mean, obviously it's been filmed. Are you even there for the filming process, or you come in after?
For Ink and Gold, I came in after. A lot of projects I get involved from the beginning, depending on what position I am with the film. But with Ink and Gold, it had already been filmed. Zakiya had already won the award and had filmed it. And I had come in as a mentor, an industry mentor for the creative arts program at Massey University. And we got to know each other, and he was doing the film all on his own. Once he got back, he was trying to learn how to edit, learn how to do everything. And so first I started mentoring him. And then as it got more and more in depth, he asked me if I would come in as, so I came in as lead producer and editor to help him out, because he was carrying all positions, all hats. And he's an extraordinary young man. Kind of reminds me, or what I would like to think I was like, as a young man that believed in possibility, which is what I think the core of the film is about. Yes, it's about him winning a metal design competition for the Lausanne 2020 Youth Winter Olympic Games, and then pitching to perform there, because that was always his goal. And we'll get into that more about the film. But I think the underlying subtext of it is that it's more about a story about a young man searching for connection with humanity using art and sport in expressive forms. And coming out of COVID, I know a lot of young people in my life, nieces, nephews, friends, kids, they were losing a lot of hope for the future because it seemed so bleak. And so it was really refreshing to find someone who was still holding on to that and believed in possibility. And so I came on after the fact, to go back to your original question. I came on after they had gathered everything, and then I started helping assimilate it, and then eventually edited the film.
Okay. This is always a question I have for any editor I've ever will speak to in the future. So when I see a finished film, obviously it's ready to go. But when you see the film, how much extra footage do you get to enjoy?
All of it. Most editors I know, on occasion, like the directors will and the producers may, you know, you'll tag the takes that you like, you'll tag the footage you like. But with a lot of the processes, they tag it, but they don't have time to really go through everything. They just know from when while they're doing it, while they're filming, they'll say, oh, tag that one, saying that's one that I feel that I like that I got in the can. But for me, every time I've been involved with editing, we look at everything because we want to scan and also give a perspective that sometimes you might have a take that something's off in the background or some in the foreground, or the hand is moving of the actor over here that distracts. And then you go, wait a minute, but this is a really great take on the actor, or even not on the actor, on the background, something happening that they aren't looking at that can really add to the ambiance or add to the story. And so, especially with everything being digital, it's so much easier. The higher you shoot 2K, but 4K, 5K, 6K, you can zoom in to something, you know, from space basically, but with airplanes and satellites, you can zoom in to an ant on the ground. And so as an editor, since that's our job to take everything and put it together to tell the story that the director would like, we also, at least most editors I know, we like to also say, hey, here's another way of looking at it. It amplifies your story, or it adds. To me, all things are about storytelling. So whatever position a person's in, especially as an editor, does each beat progress the story, or does it leave it parallel? And so if you're not progressing and you're not taking the audience forward in the movement, is it necessary? And so that's why sometimes it may not be the talking head you're looking at, but it may be the sweat dripping down a window, or, you know, it could be just these tiniest details that add to the tension or to the story progressing. So I like to see everything. So it takes lots and lots of time going through and then going back through. And so I do the same thing where then I dog tag everything, edit it down to all the stuff I like, then go back and do it again and do it again. And it's always about putting things together in story beats and story arcs and then the whole film and then editing down. I know I've worked with James Cameron in the future, and I know sometimes I think even with his first Avatar, I think it was probably, I thought I heard like 5 hours or actually 12 hours, the first one. And then he started cutting down from that. I may be speaking wrong. I just know that's what I was told by some team members. And so that's what it's about. The thing is taking out the extra water, taking out the extra beats, that you have a cohesive storyline that you don't lose the audience.
Okay. This is a 16 minute short, roughly maybe 17 minutes. I think it's 16:58. Yep. Mm-hmm. So what is your first edit at? Is it at half an hour? Is it 45 minutes? Is it an hour and a half?
Well, considering how much footage he had, the first edit I would say was probably around an hour and 20.
I can believe it.
Yeah, but we want, because all the footage of him as a young man, Zakiya's parents were international teachers, and so they would move every 2 to 3 years to a different country. So he grew up like in Kuwait, Bangladesh, Vietnam, China, the list goes on and on. And so one of the things that he loved, even though he was this little field hockey, he loved it. And so he was playing with some national teams when he was 11 and 12. He was this little prodigy on field hockey. So they thought of him as an athlete the whole time. They had no idea he had this passion for art and was doing art at school. But he actually had a little camera that his grandparents, I think, gave him. And he would just set it up and film himself doing things. So all the footage of the film in the past of him growing up showing him was he taking himself. He would just set it up and film this stuff that no one knew he was doing. And then we got a lot of pictures from his dad. His dad's a photographer as well as a teacher. And so we had to go through all of that, which could have been a film unto itself. Like if you were going to do a home video movie, it would have been 2 hours minimum of footage. And then the footage of the actual prepping the design, and then prepping to pitch, because they, once he won, he said, "Hey, I'd like to perform." Because what he does on top of all his artwork is he takes balls and dips them in ink, different colors inks, and then uses the hockey stick. And he does this kind of performance art on these huge, huge mats. They're like big rugs, sometimes wall size. And that's what he said, "I'd like to perform at the Olympic Games," because when he was a field hockey player, his dream was always to be an athlete at the Olympic Games, and they never had field hockey. So this was his chance. So they didn't get it. So they said, "Can you put together a little 2-minute pitch?" And he put it together and they said, "You're performing at the opening games." So he got to receive all 3 medals from Thomas Bach, but then he got to perform at the Olympic Games, which was the highlight of it for him. And so we had to go through. He was filming. He was smart enough to know that he wanted to film the process. And so he was filming all the prep. Like he filmed the design process of the medals, the drawing and all the different things, the rendering, and then the design of the performance at the Olympics. And then when he was at the Olympics for a week or 10 days, they were filming everything there. So that again was unto its own. And then we added to go all these interviews. And so then the interviews became a lot. So it really was, we did it as kind of 3 different sections first, all the older footage that we wanted to cut down that we could possibly use, then the B section of the actual design and performance, and then the interviews. And so that's why it was like 3 huge chapters or 3 series, like sequels. And then we just kept editing it till we got it into one cohesive story, which probably took us down to about, I don't know, 38, 40 minutes, but that was a lot of fat that we needed to cut. So we just kept cutting and cutting. And then we sat on like an 19 minute film for a while. And it was stuff that he was passionate about. But after a little bit, I convinced him. I said, "This is great. And it's great about your history, but it doesn't necessarily progress the story. It's just like a side story." And so that was kind of my job as an editor, I think, and also as a producer, to whether I could sway him or not. It's still his story and it's what he wants at the end of the day. But he agreed with me that that would be a great little side clip for blogs. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to put it as a little companion piece. So, yeah.
So my next question is, when you're inserting things as an editor, what vision do you have? I mean, I understand you have an opening. I understand you got to introduce your character. But then at one point you start going, oh, parents, I need parents here. And you need to drop them in. So I want to know as an editor, how do you know at that time this is needed?
This is my process. This isn't necessarily everyone else's process.
That's what I'm looking for. I want yours.
But for my process, because I don't usually edit, I believe this is for me. I started as an actor and I did a performer, and then I got into directing, and I was always writing. I've been writing since I was a teenager, and I realized then once I really got to Hollywood and then in New York before that, I decided I want to work crew at the same time. And so a lot of times when I was an actor, they wouldn't necessarily let me do it unless it was days I was off. But then I decided to go for crew positions as well and then learn from producers, because I thought the more well-rounded I was, the better team player I was. So I'm not the kind of guy that wants to go in and say, oh, I know how to do this. This is how you do it. I just want to be able to support. I know for a fact there's no I in filmmaking. It's all team, and it takes an army. And anyone who tells you otherwise does not know what they're doing. But I just like to be articulate, so that if someone is including me in the conversation and they ask my opinion, I'm the first to say, you know what, I think there's someone better to ask about this. But if I'm in the room, and that's usually as a producer or on one of the top creative positions, I can have an opinion or an articulation that can answer some questions. And so that's where everything goes back to me, like to your question that seems a little tangential, but everything goes back to the story. And so where I know where to arc, once we get the footage, I like to script everything out. So from the interviews, I have it scripted. And so that's where one of the things I did for Zakiya, so it wasn't more time on me trying to do that as well, is I had him write out all the things he spoke about so that we had an actual script. And then I plotted the script, because with the documentary coming in at that far into the process, they didn't write out a script. This is his first film. He was this very young filmmaker, and he found people to help him out. And so they were just doing guerrilla filmmaking, where they were running and gunning and just trying to get footage and going, let's show this. And so in their mind, and in Zakiya's mind, he was just going to tell it chronological. And I was saying, you can still tell the story chronological to where it arcs and you come to the climax at the Olympic performance. But I said, but the story of itself of the whole film doesn't have to be chronological. You can be talking about something that takes you to flashbacks, or your parents can be talking about, or teachers or whoever can be speaking about something that takes us to those flashback sections that then adds more info. Because I said, sometimes when you do things chronological, it's like Big Brother. It gets a little boring. Nothing against the Big Brother producers and writers. But that's where I find. You find the arc of the story, you break it down into story beats, and then I go, okay, on this story beats, and when you have it like that, I can move. Oh, this section of his childhood is movable depending on what they're talking about. So I helped him, and I kept him involved in the whole process, but we created the script, basically, and so that we knew where we wanted the story beats that would add a little more to take them in the arc, then add a little more to get to that arc, so that people felt like they knew him, that they knew his family, that they knew who he was and why this was important to him.
Okay. I want to go back to the beginning of the film. You can correct me if I'm off here a bit. How much did you tinker with the beginning on the editing? It is beautiful. The drops and stuff. I got to say, and you sound designed this too, right? Do I have that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so this will help me. I really thought if you just sent me a 2 minutes of that opening, you would have won an award. That editing right there is phenomenal. The way you blend things. So how did that come to you? I mean, obviously I know the ink droplets are him. I get that. But you don't know that when you start. I mean, when you start the short, that's all new. So your sound and your imaging there and the cuts are just beautiful. So how did you come to that conclusion to do that?
Wow, thank you very much. That's very kind. There was something about, like I said, Zakiya, he's such a humble young man, but yet he has this passion. And for some people, they say, hey, that's not my type of art. He also does major art, like digital art and paintings. And he's had art shows now in the UK, and I think he has one in Spain or somewhere coming up. But he's I think he's going to have a really solid art career too, but he also loves the visual medium. But so I watched him doing some of this, and there was so much about the ink. And what I love about him, he doesn't worry about what he looks like at all. Whereas most of us, we worry so much about, oh, is the lighting great for our pictures, particularly when you're on film. But he's so much about his art and the message. It's all about the message. It's the same thing with his medal, that he was inspired so much by Maya Angelou, by her poem that there's beauty in diversity. And because he grew up in all these cultures, that's to him why he fell in love with the Olympics. It's about diverse cultures and about acceptance, open arms to anyone. And so his whole thing is about the message. So when he's doing this performance art, he's got his hands where he's dipping the balls and, you know, he's wiping his hand. He's got ink all over him and on his clothes. And I loved it. There was so much that the ink became part of him. So that's why, even though we had the gold medal and people focus on that, I wanted to focus on the ink. And even though I know the ink drop effect has been around for a while, I was like, people are going to go, oh, well, this has been there. But there was something, there's something so integral and something that's so, I don't know, foundational with the ink about him. That's why I said to him, hey, I want to do some ink drops. And so I included him on all of that. I got him to look. We went over some of the techniques so that he could create, like I had him create some of the inks and then doing more where it would spread more and changing the tempos. And then the little 2-minute video that they had made to pitch for him to perform at the Olympics, I loved it. I thought they did such a beautiful job. And that's when he showed it to me. That was the first thing that got me involved. I was so impressed because so many people talk a good game, but how many people actually put something down and finish something? And he had. And so that's when I went, this young man's different. So yeah, I really want to help, because he doesn't talk it. He puts action behind it. And so I took most of that footage. We got a few extra pieces, but then it was just about putting it together to what is the first ink drop that people go, just like with the poster, that you just see the hockey stick and you see a black ball on some white paper with lines. So I wanted the entire title sequence to go with each ink drop. It's like the painting or the picture or the words, the story is starting to come into picture or come into clarity. And so that's where that came. So it was just going through the footage and figuring out which one would take you on that to make it interesting. Because some people, it's not their type of art, but it's not about whether it's their type of art. To me, film is visual, whereas stage, the actors guide the audience more because it's more script. Books, the words guide the audience, but film is visual. So a look can say more than lines. And so that was why I wanted that title sequence to say, we're going to introduce you to this world, but the world is going to take you on a story.
Wow. Okay. Does anything ever surprise you when you get on a project? I mean, you obviously come to the project. Sometimes you're not there the whole time. You're just editing. You're like, oh, wow, that's interesting. I should focus more on that. And that wasn't in your initial storyline. You have a rough idea. You tell me you plot it out. You're looking at the footage. You're like, oh, wait, I got to add that back in. How does that work for you?
Well, that's my favorite part. I mean, I'll be honest with you. And it's the same thing. If you focus on storytelling, and you don't lock yourself in. And so that's why when I'm working with any team or when it's me, I want to surround myself with people who will challenge me. And then when I've been blessed with the greatest mentors, it's been the greatest blessing of my life. And so when I started having success, I would say to all these people who've been mentors, oh, I'm going to take you or do this. And they were like, no, just pay it forward. So that's what I do. I try anywhere I am in the world, I guest teach and I don't make them give me fees. So I work with young kids. I work with university kids, whatever. And, so that's why I always try to guide people that tell your story, but sometimes your story will show you something that you didn't even realize in it, because we are so caught in our own perspective. And so when the way people see you or the way people see me is not the way we see ourselves. And so sometimes that's why when people see themselves on camera or they hear themselves on tape, they hate it because it's not how they hear inside. Well, it's the same thing about stories. And so that's my favorite part of editing and story development is finding the things that are, I don't know. Everybody knows this in Hollywood. Maybe I shouldn't even talk about this, but there's the story that in Jerry Maguire, the scene in the locker room where Tom Cruise is with Cuba Gooding Jr. and Tom starts laughing and then getting mad, trying to make himself serious. Well, Cuba was doing some funny things, painting himself blue and everything to make Tom laugh. And Tom broke and started laughing. He was like, ah, cut. And Cameron was like, no, keep going, keep going. And he actually used that scene in the movie because it showed this side of Tom, that it was Tom the actor, but it really added to the character. And so sometimes our biggest mistakes are what we think are flaws. Are the most beautiful things. So that was the thing I was looking for. I'll be honest with you. When I'm editing, I'm looking for the stuff that's the extra stuff that the director wasn't necessarily planning on catching or that wasn't part of the initial storyline, because that's where you go, oh, can this elevate or can this flavor? Can this take this color of blue into aqua? Can it take it into sky blue? Because it's a visual that just elevates it. So yeah, there's always surprises, and especially to when the footage that you think you've got comes out and it wasn't quite in focus. It's too soft, so it won't work with all the other footage around it. So sometimes you really are scrambling to go, oh my gosh, this isn't going to work. And pickups might be a little difficult because we've already gotten so far. So to me, when I'm going through the film footage, I basically am mining for gold, and I go, oh, this is a great little nugget. This might go with this. So I keep a list, and then I put it in a folder, and I have what I call my nugget folder. And so there are all these beautiful little moments that then I can go back when I need stuff or I'm looking for something or a transition isn't arcing right. I go, ah, here's this thing that'll help transition to the next beat.
Okay, let's go the opposite of that question. Have you ever edited a film that you're missing something? You're like, oh, I need more coverage of this. And so I understand you're screwed. I mean, you're the last guy. So there is no more coverage coming. What do you do in that situation? I don't think you had that problem with Ink and Gold. So I don't want anybody to think I'm referring to Ink and Gold because I think you had all the coverage you needed. I'm just more interested in general.
Yeah, there are. So this is another thing that when you're in an editor position, the sooner that you establish your relationship with the director in particular, because it's the director's job to tell the visual storyline. And so that's why you as an editor is very, the DP is so important because they become the eyes. And so that's why a lot of directors like to be director DP, especially in smaller projects. But the DP becomes the eyes of what's in the camera. It's the director's job to articulate what they're looking for. But the sooner you and establish a really tight relationship. Like on the big films, you get the dailies uploaded by the end of the day. So you are already going through it and you are. So that's why when you have a huge crew and a huge budget, they usually get the dailies 2 days later. So they try to push for a day later, but usually they say, hey, here's the stuff we like. And they're showing it to the director and usually the team, the production team, to say, oh yeah, this looks good. This looks great. So that while they're there, and it was the same thing when I came on, there was time and it was lucky that Zakiya's parents came back in the country from a teaching thing that I could say, Zakiya, and then a couple of his interviews, I could say to the little team, hey, I need you to go back and read these interviews. And then there was a couple things too in there in the park. And when he was designing the stuff, that the footage wasn't working. So I could articulate to the cinematographer and to Zakiya, can you go back in and either, if you don't have access to a crane, because this is a very low budget, you who has gear, we're going to do it kind of film. But I said, can you get on a ladder? Can you go up? At least get me some kind of angle so I can mirror the what's happening at the Olympics, where only 53 seconds of the film, and we didn't, but it's the Olympic Committee, God love them, and they've been very supportive, but they sent us just a little bit of footage so we could use, I think it's 52 or 53 seconds of his performance, but the rest of that performance I edited together because it wasn't all of it. So I edited footage from his rehearsals, and then we had it graded to match the lighting of the performance, with, because they had a lot of reds and blues. So we graded that so we could piece it together so the audience could kind of feel like they were there. But that was the thing. So going for all the stuff of his practices, I was able to go. But when you can't, when you don't have that relationship to go, hey, pick this up if you can, grab something, that's where you have to be really creative, and you have to kind of recreate a whole new beat and say, okay, we don't have this. So usually you have to actually change your story beat and change your arc so that you can go, well, we don't have that footage and we can't create that beat with what we've had. So you have to create a new beat. And usually when you create a new beat, it changes the story arc. So it's tricky. It's really tricky. So that's why as soon as I can, I want to be involved with the director and the DP to say, hey, you're still there. You've got the people. Can you go back and do this? But yeah, it's, for me, the only way that I deal with it when we don't have it is recreate beats and kind of change the story.
Okay, I'm going to shift focus a bit. I'm going to discuss you a bit more now. So I think we're good on goal. If I missed something, I don't think I did, so we're good. It's, I looked up your credits. It says Avatar Navigator. What does that even mean?
The well, I was hired in, I did acting on it, and so I was the one of the small boats that shoots the whales, since I hope I'm not, you know, killing anybody who hasn't seen it yet. But we filmed two and three at the same time. And so we'll see it's that they filmed so many hours. So a lot of it lands on, forgive the dog in the background, but they filmed so many hours. And I was the navigator. There was a 5-person team that's on one of those little whale shooting boats. And I was the navigator. So it was kind of like the lead of it with it. So, yeah.
Was that fun? Did you have a good time?
Oh yeah, yeah. James Cameron is so respectful, and he's great, and he has this reputation of being a taskmaster, but he's not. He works harder than anybody on the set, and he just asked you to do your job. But he's great. He is so respectful, and he has come up. The thing that was extraordinary about working on that film is the techniques they come up with. They invented a whole new technique, and they have a new version of it coming out. That's why they're waiting for the next two. But just watching that, watching the new technique, and I don't think I'm allowed to speak about it. I signed a non-disclosure on that.
Yeah, probably not a good idea.
Yeah, it was. I will tell you, it was extraordinary, and so it was really interesting. I guess because of the position I was in, and they kept me on set while I was there, I got to sit kind of in Grand Central, and see the screens and watch him directing, and John Landau. And it was great. I love working with what I call visionaries and pioneers, and he is one, and his team is. So it's again, the day I stop learning is the day I think I leave this planet, because I think movement is life. Life is movement. And you learn something new every day. And I'm open to learning anything people are willing to teach me.
Nick Cannon Show. I don't know what you did on it.
On Nick Cannon, I did a prop. I was like prop master. And then on the last couple episodes, I did art direction on that. A good buddy of mine does a lot of the art direction and all the stage stuff on a lot of Nickelodeon shows. And so he knew that I had experience with that. So on that, he was doing 3 shows at once. And so he said, I need help. Will you come in? And I was like, absolutely. And again, every time you do a different position, it adds to my palette. Like, I think we're all, no matter, I don't care if you're in business, you're a doctor, we can all be artists, but I think we all have a palette. And so when we're kids, we got red, yellow, and blue. And then you learn how to mix yellow and red, mix orange, but orange. And then when you add white to it, you get different shades. Well, I think of myself as a palette. So anytime I can get a new color, it just makes me a better artist. And so, that was a blast. I mean, especially for Nickelodeon, the crazy props that you have to come up with, and then setting, and then the season finale, which they've still never aired on that one. I'm not sure why. We filmed on location in Hawaii, and it was hysterical. I hope they release it someday. But Nick also, he's such a creative guy. I mean, he was young. He was a teenager then, but he was a hoot. And I'll say that word, a hoot, because he was so creative and just so open to try anything. And which you love with young people, that they're not afraid of self-criticism.
Okay. Also, I read the Today Show. What were you doing there?
On the Today Show, I've done it a couple different times, but on Today Show, that was more as a performer. The first one were a couple of Broadway shows or tours that I had to be on the Today Show as an actor or singer. And then, yeah, I think that's mostly what the Today Show was. And then actually an affiliate of it, I was a director of one of the sections.
So is your Wicked performance on the Today Show?
No, the Wicked, when they did that, that was on the Tonight Show with the whole team. But the one on the Today Show was Peter Pan. So,
okay.
With Kathy Rigby. Yeah, with Kathy Rigby. I was the lead lost boy, slightly soiled, which sounds funny, but yeah.
It is. How's voiceover work for you? Do you enjoy that?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's so much fun because you get to step outside of worrying how you look on camera and you're in there. Like when I'm doing voices, sometimes you do things like with your throat to make a sound or whatever. You can do whatever you want and you can be ridiculously over the top, jumping up and down. And so it's really fun because it makes you think of creativity from a different perspective. So yeah, so I've had a lot of fun and it's really great money in a quick, short amount of time. And so, yeah. It's
okay. Last thing about you, you design CD packages.
Yep.
So how do you get, like, I mean, you're an editor, you do all this, but I mean, a CD package is a very, I would say, individualistic idea. Like everybody has visions. Do they give you visions ahead of time or do you just guess?
Some do, some don't. I see it more as like a filmmaker. It's creative, but it started with someone I know. She's an amazing singer. She's had, I don't know, 7 solo albums, but she was with Exposé, Kelly Moneymaker. And it was her very first solo album. She sang with Ringo Starr, tons of people. And, she had hired people and they kept putting pink cotton candy clouds behind her. And that's not her. And so she's like, I'm not happy. I can't do it. And I said, well, I'll do something for you because I know Photoshop very well. And also doing film, I have a visual eye. And it turned into not just doing the art, but having to learn how to do the packages. And then I started doing film posters and EPK design for people. Again, it was all of it came from wanting to learn more, but it also kept me. I've never worked anything but in this business. I've been so blessed. So I could act, I could direct, I could write, I could do art design. It's just led me to be able to be in the creative world, making a living and being very happy. And so that's where that all stemmed from, was really to help some friends. And then I started getting offers and some studios calling, hey, we love this package. Would you do one for this? And so I don't do it all the time because it takes a lot of time and I don't like sitting too much at a computer. Granted, when you're editing, you're sitting at a computer. So I just pick and choose what I do when I have the time to do it. And it's been really fun.
Okay, now we're time to my favorite part, the three fun questions.
Okay.
Favorite film, because your first time on the show.
Oh, God, that's hard. There are so many. I can't even answer that. I mean, everything from Shawshank Redemption to American Beauty to, believe it or not, Singing in the Rain when I was 3 years old, and my mom had in her journal that I watched it because I used to love to run in the rain as a kid. They couldn't keep me out of the rain. So it came on TV and my dad woke me up as a 3-year-old and they set me in front of it. And they said I was perplexed, I didn't move. And at the end, I pointed to the TV and I said, that's me. And they thought I meant that's me playing in the rain. And I knew at that moment, no, that's me. I want to do films. And dance, make movies. I really did. I've known. And when you know that young, the rest is just work. It was easy. But that film is very pivotal to me because it was the one that made me go, there's my life. But I mean, this is, seriously, I could go on and on. There are so many brilliant stories and I'm all about the story. So Princess Bride. I mean, there's so many different genres too. Like Water for Child, I love what we always called foreign films here because back in the day, they didn't usually have the budget that Hollywood had. And so it was all about the story. It was all about the direction. It was all about the lighting. La Femme Nikita, Les Enfants. I mean, I'll go on. But it's to me, if it's a great story, you've got me.
Okay. This one may be a hard one. Your favorite edited film?
Oh, God. Amelie.
I would totally give you Home Away. That's a very hard edit on those. Tons of edits in Home Away.
Yeah, no, not Home Away. Amelie.
The French film.
Yeah, only because going from the live action to the animation and everything, they capture magic to me. And when you can transport me, I mean, don't get me wrong. I could, again, give you a list of 50 right now.
Oh, I know you could.
That's the first one that came to mind.
Perfect.
It left me feeling like they captured magic. And so that to me gives it
an extra. Next one, you can only give me one answer. I want you to recommend a film people have never seen.
Oh, you might have me stumped on that one.
Oh, perfect.
Film people have never seen. Because I always tell everybody to see a film when I've seen it and I love it.
I'll give you one right now. I'd recommend I, Ink and Gold. I would totally recommend it. It's a fabulous doc. So there you go. You're out. Before we let you go, socials time. Where can people find your work?
Ink and Gold Movie on Instagram and Twitter. Our website is Ink and Gold Movie. Same thing with Facebook. So you see it all on there. You can't see the movie right now. We're in negotiations for distribution. We have qualified for Oscar consideration.
Excellent.
And we've just got our 68th official selection and our 65th award, including 39 best films. And so this has just been an incredible journey, unexpected one. So as soon as we have distribution, we'll post for sure so that people know who we're going to release it through.
Okay. Thank you for your time and have a great day.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Please check out our YouTube channel, and you can also support the show by going to PayPal. Thank you.